the world as a system on June 27th, 2008. The man who erected Microsoft walked out of its headquarters for the last time as a full-time hand. Workers lined the hallways, Ray Klom and clapping, some holding banners that read, "Thank you, Bill." He smiled, gestured, tried to look relaxed, but the moment was emotional. For 33 times, he'd lived and breathed this place. Every wall, every line of law, every product launch. His fingerprints were on all of it. Now he was leaving to attack commodity, much bigger, the world's hardest problems. He called it the alternate act. Resetting the mission when Gates and Melinda launched their foundation, it was meant to be emblematic. It was meant to be functional, practical, logical, ruthless about results. Gates saw global inequality the same way he saw computer bugs, as system crime staying to be fixed. He erected his new world headquarters in Seattle, not far from Microsoft, but its atmosphere could end up being more different. No cells, no law reviews. Rather, charts of developing nations, medical maps, and graphs tracking vaccination rates covered the walls. The charge was enormous, but clear, annihilate preventable complaint, ameliorate education, encyclopedically expand access to technology Gates wanted figures. Data, evidence that every bone spent created measurable progress. However, UCAN ameliorated, he liked to say. If you say Ant measure it, it was Microsoft allowing applied to humanity. The scale of the challenge at first, the problem sounded inviting. Billions lived in poverty. Millions of children failed from conditions that no longer was in the advanced world. The structure for change, roads, conventions, force change slightly was in numerous places. But that only motivated him. He started flying Africa and South Asia regularly, not for print ops, but for field visits. He'd sit with original croakers, growers, and preceptors. He'd pepper them with questions, not out of arrogance, but out of sheer curiosity. How do vaccines reach pastoral areas? Why are children still getting malaria if the treatments live? What stops growers from doubling their yields? These were the kinds of mystifications that fascinated him. And sluggishly, answers began to take shape. One sapiens hit him beforehand, the biggest hedge to health, was just drug, it was distribution. Vaccines was. The challenge was getting them to the people who demanded them before they spoiled. That consummation led the foundation to invest in cold chain logistics, refrigeration, shadowing, and delivery networks. The approach was realistic, not glamorous, but it worked. Global health is engineering. What made the Gates Foundation different from utmost charities was its structure. It operated like a launch, up, but with billions in capital. There were brigades devoted to vaccine, sanitation, husbandry, and education. Each had measurable pretensions and daily reports. The foundation partnered with governments, exploration labs, and indeed private companies to move ideas from proposition to perpetration. Gates encouraged failure, as long as it was fast and instructive. However, we're not taking big enough bets, he told his staff, if we're not failing occasionally. One early success was a fight against polio. By the early 2000s, it was nearly canceled, but small outbreaks in Nigeria, India, and Pakistan kept it alive. Gates made a particular preoccupation. He worked with the World Health Organization, Rotary International, and in numerous original leaders. When he visited townlets, he'd kneel beside vaccination workers, asking about force chains and original resistance. His presence occasionally startled people. The world's richest man squinched in the dirt, holding vials of vaccine, but it showed how deeply he'd internalized his charge. By 2014, polio cases had dropped by 99. For Gates, that statistic signified further than any profit periphery he'd ever celebrated at Microsoft. Hookups and pressure, but global change is no way simple. The foundation's reach was so vast that governments began to calculate on it, occasionally too heavily. Critics bothered that one man's influence was shaping global health precedences. Should a private citizen decide which conditions merited backing? Was Ent at the job of democratically tagged governments? Gates heard those examines constantly. His response was calm, nearly fine, "We're not replacing anyone. We're filling gaps where requests and governments have Ent acted presto enough." And to be fair, his results spoke for themselves. Malaria deaths fell. HIV treatment expanded. Agrarian inventions boosted yields in poor regions. Still, The power dynamics were real. When the Gates Foundation committed backing, entire diligence shifted. Pharmaceutical companies restructured R&D channels around conditions that had formerly been ignored. That kind of influence made people uneasy, indeed, as it saved lives. But Gates wasn't looking for applause. He was looking for optimization. To him, progress was in a moral palm. It was an engineering one. Reimagining education at home, Gates turned his focus to another broken system, education. He believed that the same sense that gauge technology could ameliorate seminaries. With data, translucency, and responsibility, preceptors could be supported, scholars could be more tracked, and inequality could be narrowed. The foundation poured billions into enterprise like the Common Core norms in the U.S., aiming to make education more harmonious and effective across countries. It funded experimental seminaries, new testing systems, and schoolteacher training programs. Results were mixed. Some programs succeeded, others sizzled. Critics indicted Gates of sophisticating education, trying to apply software sense to mortal development. But indeed, when plans faltered, Gates didn't retreat. He ameliorated, recalibrated, and kept funding new experiments. However, you'll end up with neither, he said, if you want progress without threat. Education reform tutored him an assignment that indeed he hadn't completely understood at Microsoft systems erected on people, not machines, move else. The weight of responsibility as his foundation grew, so did its public profile. Gates went from being a commercial icon to a global statesman. Chairpersons called him. World leaders sought his counsel. That kind of moral authority was any commodity he'd ever asked for. But he accepted it because he believed the world demanded people who could act snappily who were ent-bound by politics. He gave speeches on climate change, poverty, and vaccines. He witnessed before Congress. He batted disbelievers on live TV. Always calm, always set, always armed with data. Still, intimately, he remained the same logical, slightly awkward man he'd always been. Musketeers described feasts at his house as part social vent, part forum. Exchanges would jump from microfinance to inheritable engineering to chess strategy. He was unattractive in the traditional sense, but his conviction drew people in. He believed deeply that the bow of progress was measurable and that humans with the right tools could bend it overhead. The Microsoft connection lives on Indeed after stepping down from the company. Gates remained Microsoft's North Star. He stayed on the board, advising on product direction and long-term strategy. When new CEOs came in, first Steve Ballmer, also Satya Nadella, they frequently turned to Gates for perspective. He supported the idea of software as service long before it came mainstream. He encouraged Paul computing, saw AI implicit beforehand, and supported Nadella's focus on empathy and reinvention. Though his day-to-day focus was philanthropy, his mind no way left technology. In fact, he saw both worlds clustering. Data analytics for complaint modeling, software for agrarian soothsaying, machine literacy for education. Technology, to him, was still the great amplifier, the most important switch for mortal progress. The quiet contender despite all his achievements, Gates no way stopped contending just with different opponents. Where once he measured success by request share, now he measured it by lives saved. Where formerly he tracked product launches, now he tracked vaccination juggernauts. He still worked ferociously. His timetable was packed to the nanosecond. He read scientific papers late into the night, scribbling notes in the perimeters. He could quote statistics about malaria the way he formerly quoted lines of sea law. Indeed, his recesses were ent really recesses. They were reading marathons. Musketeers joked that he was the only Joe who turns rest into exploration. That drive could be exhausting for people around him, but it was the source of his power. Gates was then chasing fame presently. He was chasing effectiveness. Heritage, reframed by the end of the 2000s, commodity extraordinary had happed. Bill Gates, formerly the ultimate commercial symbol, had come the face of global liberality. The richest man alive was now defined not by how much he possessed, but by how much he gave down. He inspired other billionaires to follow suit. In 2010, alongside Warren Buffett, he launched the Giving Pledge, prompting the ultra-wealthy to commit at least half their fortunes to philanthropy. Dozens joined, from Elon Musk to Mackenzie Scott. It was an artistic shift. Gates had reframed success itself. Wealth was no longer the wind-up. Impact was. And in that sense, his alternate act was in a departure from his first. It was the durability of the same sense. In software, he'd erected a system to make information accessible. In philanthropy, he was erecting a system to make occasion accessible. Different tools. Same thing. Ending scene in 2010, Intelligencer asked Gates if he ever missed the exhilaration of Microsoft, the product launches, the lore views, the sheer chaos of the early days. He smiled and said, "I still write software occasionally, but what I'm really trying to remedy now is reality." That line added it up impeccably. Bill Gates hadn't changed as much as people allowed. The tools had changed. The stakes had changed. But the mindset, the grim belief that problems could be answered through intelligence, continuity, and replication, remained the same. And that's where we find him at this stage of his life, a man who conquered one world, also turned his mind towards saving another. Power, pressure, and a pursuit of progress by the 2010s, Bill Gates was no longer CEO or coder. He was commodity far foreigner, a private citizen with further power to impact global health than utmost governments. And he knew it. But then's the thing. He didn't crave power for its own sake. He craved effectiveness. His entire life had been erected on the belief that systems could be fixed, that with enough data and collaboration, you could make anything from a computer to a country run better. The world, however, is ent law. It pushes back. The Gates Foundation becomes a superpower by 2015. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation had become the largest private charitable association in the world. Its talent passed $40 billion. Its periodic spending battled the World Health Organization's budget. From Seattle, Gates managing conglomerate of impact complaint eradication programs in Africa, agrarian reform in Asia, and education reform in the U.S. His foundation came a global network that could move briskly than governments and frequently did. He could call a meeting with chairpersons or scientists and have them show up. He could deflect billions of bones with a hand. It was influence unlike anything a private citizen had applied in ultramodern history. That position of control brought both admiration and dubitation. Sympathizers called him a visionary who had revolutionized giving. Critics called him an unelected cracker shaping public policy from before unrestricted doors. Gates didn't deny the scale of his influence. He just saw it as logical. Still, he said, you have a responsibility to use them. If you have coffers and moxie that can break problems. To him, that was simple ethics. The science of saving lives inside the foundation, the work felt more like exploration than charity. Brigades were structured around measurable issues, smaller child deaths, advanced crop yields, cleaner water. The language was emotional. It was logical criteria, cost per life saved, outgrowth modeling. It could sound cold, but it was severely effective. Take malaria. Gates and his foundation pour hundreds of millions into combating the complaint. But they didn't just hand out bed nets, they funded inheritable exploration, data modeling, and vaccine trials. They looked at the complaint ecosystem as a whole. The result was the world's first malaria vaccine, launched in 2019 after decades of failed attempts. It wasn't perfect, only about 40 effective, but it saved lives. And it proved that continuity, paired with backing and data, could bend reality. This was Gates' mindset to still do and just palliate symptoms, redesign the system. The climate turned as the 2010s rolled on. Gates' attention widened again, this time to climate change. He'd always believed in technology as a result of everything, but climate change tested that belief. It wasn't just a problem of invention. It was a problem of scale, politics, and mortal indolence. He started reading everything he could find on energy systems, husbandry, and emigrations. He met with scientists, masterminds, and policy experts. The more he learned, the more he realized commodity many people were willing to say audibly we were instituting presto enough. In 2015, he innovated Advanced Energy Gambles, a $1 billion fund concentrated on clean tech. Its charge was to find and gauge radical results, new battery technologies, carbon prisoner, nuclear invention, and zero emigration energies. Gates didn't see climate as a political issue. To him, It was an engineering failure. The world still ran on outdated energy law, and we demanded a software update. Presto. He added it up bluntly. We need cautions, not in the sense of godly intervention, but in the sense of technological improvements that change what's possible. He backed companies that aimed to resuscitate concrete, aeronautics energy, and food product. Numerous failed. Some didn't. But that was the point. Big bets, big assignments. Hookups and pressures through it all. Gates' closest mate remained Warren Buffett. Their fellowship was an odd pairing. Buffett, the old academy investor from Omaha. Gates, the restless technologist from Seattle. But they balanced each other impeccably. Buffett predicated Gates' intensity with calm pragmatism. Gates, in turn, pushed Buffett into the world of global philanthropy. Together, they launched the Giving Pledge in 2010, a public commitment for billionaires to give away at least half their wealth. It was unfairly binding, but it carried moral weight. Soon, names like Elon Musk, Richard Branson, and Mackenzie Scott inked on. Buffett formally said, "If you're the luckiest person in the world, it's your job to turn around and partake that luck." Gates lived that principle. But giving away plutocrat at that scale came with dichotomies. Gates wanted effectiveness, yet mortal progress isn't always effective. Societies, politics, and feelings do and observe algorithms. He had to learn modesty, to realize that throwing plutocrat at a problem doesn't always break it. Occasionally, progress needed tolerance. Occasionally, it needed hearkening. Review and conspiracy. By the mid-2010s, Gates had come one of the most notorious and centralizing numbers on Earth. For every caption praising his philanthropy, another indicted him of manipulating world health for profit or power. The rise of the internet, the very thing he helped unleash, turned public opinion into chaos. Conspiracy propositions spread briskly than any vaccine could. Some claimed Gates wanted to implant microchips, others that he finagled conditions for control. It was absurd, but he understood the psychology. People sweat what they see and quantify, he formally said. The more complex the world becomes, the further people search for villains. He was bitter, just fascinated by how information evolved. But it did change him. He came more conservative about public appearances, further deliberate about messaging. He realized that influence without trust is fragile. Philanthropy as strategy, Gates' gospel of paying was frequently misnew. He didn't see philanthropy as charity. He saw it as investment in mortal eventuality. He treated it like adventure capital for civilization. High threat, high return. For illustration, the foundation funded exploration on new restroom technologies. Not glamorous work, but transformative for sanitation in poor countries. Bill himself formally demonstrated a prototype on stage, holding up a jar of mortal waste to prove a point about complaint. That amenability to be uncomfortable, to put data and practicality over image, defined his after times. He was chasing applause. He was chasing optimization. The Gates marriage in public image while the foundation thrived, Gates' particular life was under adding strain. He and Melinda had erected the foundation together, side by side for decades. But behind the scenes, their marriage was complicated. They had different grains. Bill, intensively logical, Melinda, compassionate and socially driven. They balanced each other for times, but cracks began to show. By 2021, they blazoned their divorce, shocking the world. Melinda continued as co-chair of the foundation, but the dynamic shifted. Gates, for all his brilliance, had to navigate commodity. He couldn't organize emotion. He admitted latterly that he hadn't always been good at connections, that he'd treated them too logically. But he remained proud of the family they'd erected and the work they'd done together. The public, still, wasn't always kind. Stories surfaced about his once association with Jeffrey Epstein, which Gates called a mistake and rued deeply. For a man who'd spent decades trying to optimize good, it was a brutal memorial that character can collapse in seconds. He learned that in the world of public scrutiny, sense doesn't always count. The epidemic pressure test also came 2020. COVID-19 swept across the earth, and suddenly, everyone looked to Bill Gates. Times before, in a 2015 TED Talk, he advised that the world wasn't ready for an epidemic. The videotape resurfaced and went viral. People called him predictive. Others called him the villain behind it. The Gates Foundation incontinently rotated to help fund vaccine exploration, manufacturing, and distribution. Gates coordinated with scientists, governments, and the WHO. His foundation poured billions into icing poor nations would admit vaccines. But the noise online was blaring. Every move he made was deconstructed, twisted, turned into conspiracy. Still, he pressed on. He gave interviews, calmly explaining viral replication rates, force chains, and the calculation of impunity. He no way raised his voice. He just explained, like a schoolteacher walking a nervous class through a hard subject. He wasn't trying to be right. He was trying to be useful. Reflections on power and purpose. By the time vaccines rolled out in 2021, Gates was exhausted but bent. He'd spent decades being called both idol and villain. He'd seen the stylish and worst of mortal nature. But if you asked him whether he'd do it all again, the answer was always yes. He believed, further than anything, that intelligence carries obligation, that if you can understand how the world works, UCA ain't just stand by and watch it fail. He frequently quoted the old line, "To whom much is given, much is anticipated." What this really meant for Gates was simple. Wealth was in a price. It was a tool. And tools are only meaningful when they're used. Ending scene in a quiet moment times latterly, Gates reflected on his trip with an intelligencer. "Do you ever wish you just stayed in tech?" they asked. He allowed for a moment and said, "No. Software changed the world. But it only changed a part of the world that could go it. Now I'm trying to fix the rest." That judgment captured everything. Bill Gates wasn't just trying to make life easier. He was trying to make life possible. For everyone. Heritage in the long game Bill Gates has always allowed in decades. Not diggings. Not times. Decades. That's how he erected Microsoft. It's how he erected his foundation. And it's how he sees his life's final design not as a sprint, but as an algorithm still running, still optimizing. By the 2020s, the world had changed beyond recognition from the bone he started in. He'd gone from teenage hacker to software monarch to global philanthropist to controversial symbol of ultra-modern power. But through all of it, one thing no way wavers: conviction that progress is finagled, not accidental. This part of his story isn't about wealth or fame. It's about time, how he spends it, how he measures it, and what he's trying to leave before. A new obsession energy in the planet after decades spent fighting complaint. Gates turned nearly all his focus to the Earth itself. His sense was clear: what's the point of eradicating malaria if climate change undoes all the progress? He published his book, How to Avoid a Climate Disaster, in 2021. It wasn't written for applause. It was a primer, thick with graphs, exploration, and practical ideas. He didn't claim to have all the answers. He claimed to have a frame for chancing them. He laid out 5 essential areas where emigrations must hit zero: electricity, manufacturing, transportation, husbandry, and structures. Every system had to be rebuilt from scrape, not reduced, not slightly bettered, rebuilt. He spoke less like an activist and more like a mastermind briefing a charged platoon. "It's not about guilt," he said. "It's about calculation." To him, reducing global carbon emigrations to zero was not romantic. It was an equation that had a balance. His company, Advance Energy, began investing aggressively in green tech startups, from carbon-free cement to nuclear emulsion. He called these sweats moonshots of the Earth. He knew most would fail, but he also knew one success could change everything. The legacy question, as the times went on, Gates began to face the one question. He couldn't sidestep with data. How do you measure a life? By impact? By intention? By perception? He'd spent utmost of his career quantifying success. But the aged he got, the more he understood that mortal progress is ent fluently graphed. Some of his most ambitious systems had stumbled. Some of his lowest donations had created ripple goods he'd no way prognosticated. Heritage, he realized, is not about control. It's about instigation. He formally said in an interview, "The real test of philanthropy is what happens when you're gone, whether the systems you erected keep running without you." That was the mindset shaping his final times of work structure tone. Sustaining systems that did not need his name, his plutocrat, or his presence to serve. The foundation had formally started transitioning further power to a board of trustees. He wanted it to last centuries, not just decades. He wanted it to evolve faster than he ever could. That's how masterminds suppose make commodity that outlives you. Public perception, the double edged mirror public opinion about Gates had come complicated. For some, he remained a visionary, a man who turned technology into occasion and wealth into compassion. For others, he represented a deeper apprehension with ultra-modern power, the fear that billionaires could shape the world's future without anyone advancing for them. Gates no way pretended not to notice. He read the papers, saw the tweets, heard the rumors, but he tried not to take them tête-à-tête. "The louder the world gets," he formally said, "the more you have to decide whose voice you're optimizing for." His answer was simple: optimize for verity, not blessing. Still, the review soaked occasionally. He'd spent his life erecting effects and structure. By nature, is public. Every decision is visible, every mistake amplified. But also again, Gates had always been comfortable being Ms. New. He'd been called ruthless in the 80s, monopolistic in the 90s, exorbitantly romantic in the 2000s, and uncommunicative in the 2020s. Through all of it, he stayed harmonious. He didn't crave being liked. He craved being effective. Life in the quiet times by his late 60s. Gates' days had shifted into a quieter meter, but not a slower one. He still worked long hours, but his work now revolved around meetings with scientists, global health leaders, and clean energy entrepreneurs. He loved detail. He could lose himself in a discussion about vaccine delivery logistics or the economics of hydrogen energy cells for hours. He still spent his supposed weeks insulated reading retreats in a cabin in the forest land, girdled by heaps of papers and books. No phone, no meetings, no noise. Just reading, allowing, and note-taking. That habit, unchanged since his Microsoft days, came his creative machine. It's where new enterprise were born, from education reforms to energy gambles. He formally said, "I get my stylish ideas when I'm weird enough to suppose easily." Indeed, in solitariness, he was then escaping the world. He was remedying it. The father and the mortal for all his public achievements. Gates was also trying to be more present as a father. He'd three children, Jennifer, Rory, and Phoebe, and by his own admission, he hadn't always been the most available parent during the Microsoft times. Now he made time. He talked to them about technology, ethics, and responsibility. He wanted them to suppose critically, not just inherit plutocrat. He formally told a friend, "The stylish heritage you can give your kiddies is curiosity." When asked how he balanced wealth and parenting, his answer was characteristically blunt. "They're not getting utmost of my plutocrat. They're getting education, occasion, and the anticipation to use both." His relationship with Melinda remained professional and regardful. They continue ed co-chairing the foundation and indeed appeared together at events. The participated charge had survived the particular split. They both understood commodity that many couples ever have to face when your participated work helps shape the world. It no way really ends. Indeed, when a marriage does. Reflections on mortality at this point. Gates was then pretending he'd live ever. He'd seen enough history to know that every conglomerate, indeed a humanitarian one, fades ultimately. He began speaking further openly about the limits of wealth and intelligence. "No matter how smart you are, the macrocosm still runs on rules you didn't write," he said. He was then hysterical of death. He was hysterical of wasted eventuality, of humanity not using its collaborative mind presto enough to break its own heads. That's why he funded so important exploration on afflictions, climate modeling, and agrarian adaptability. He wanted to leave before not monuments, but mechanisms. When intelligencer asked what he hoped to be flashed back for, he broke and said, "Still, smaller children die from complaint, and smaller families go empty. If 100 times from now..." That was ent false modesty. It was systems allowing. The cleaner the design, the less visible the developer. The gospel of progress still, the captions and the difficulties. If you strip down the billions, progress is possible. The world gets better when humans apply intelligence, not when they stay for cautions. Data beats opinion. Passions matter, but data companion lasting change. Wealth is a responsibility, not a prize. The further you have, the more you're obliged to fix. Failure is feedback. The stylish systems ameliorate by replication, not perfection. Time is the ultimate currency. Spend it on what scales. These were Ent taglines. They were principles that shaped every decision he made, from writing drive law as a teenager to backing malaria vaccines, as a global philanthropist. And underneath it all, one thread ran constant: the belief that intelligence, when paired with empathy, is humanity's stylish chance at survival. A man out of time in some ways, Gates was always slightly out of sync with his own period. As a youthful man, he was too practical for romanticists. As an aged man, he was too visionary for pragmatists. He lived in the space between sense and hope, the same space where utmost real progress begins. History will presumably no way agree on how to define him. Some will call him the topmost philanthropist of the ultra-modern age. Others will argue his power was too centralized, too unbounded. Both can be true. But indeed, as critics admit, this important he no way stopped trying to fix effects. That grim, occasionally exhausting drive, the turn down to accept that good enough was good enough is what set him piecemeal. The ending frame, there's a story musketeers tell about Gates in recent times. He was at a small gathering, sitting still while others batted the future of AI and robotization. Someone asked him what he allowed the biggest challenge of the century would be. He broke, looked out the window for a long moment, and said, "Getting people to watch about problems before they come particular." That's the substance of his life's work. Anticipating heads, working them beforehand, believing that reason can overrun disaster. Perhaps that's why his story resonates beyond tech or charity. It's not just about one man's genius. It's about what happens when a mind erected from machines decides to upgrade humanity, rather. Epilogue: the long game in the end. Bill Gates' heritage is in a single invention, a company, or indeed a foundation. It's the belief that humans can and should treat the world like commodity, reparable. He frequently said, "Sanguinity is and about ignoring problems. It's about believing they can be answered." And that belief, stubborn, regular, occasionally lonely, came his true masterpiece.